present a work done in collaboration with Etera Levine about the issue of defining a spin foam model for 4D quantum gravity. So first of all, I'm going to recall the spin foam quantization procedure for 4D gravity, and I'm going to focus on 4D Euclidean gravity. Then, in the second part, I'm going to introduce a framework using harmonic oscillators, initially defined for SU2 intertwiners by Laurent Frédel, Florian Girelli, and Etera Levine. And then, finally, I will show how we can use this framework in the context of spin foam model for 4D gravity. So first of all, spin foam model is a tentative framework to write a discretized path integral for gravity. The starting point is the partition function, where here we have used the first order formalism of general relativity instead of the usual metric formalism of general relativity. That is, we consider the Holst-Palatini action, where omega is a space-time connection, and E is a tetrad. So the tetrad field is the gravitational field. It can be viewed as the field that determines at each point of space-time the preferred framework, preferred frames in which motion is inertial. So in this action, we have two parts. The equation of motion of the first part of the action gives the equation of Einstein, the Einstein's equation. And the second part of the action is a topological term which won't affect the classical equation of motion, but it allows to introduce the inertia parameter, gamma, which appears in the canonical framework of the theory. And we will see that this gamma parameter plays a role at the quantum level. so then we can distinguish three main steps, in order to build what we call the spin foam amplitude, which is the discretized and quantized version of the partition function. So a spin foam is colored two complex plus a coloring. A coloring is defined by representation of the gauge group, so it will be spin foam in the Euclidean case. So irreducible representation associated to each faces of the two complex, and intertwiners associated to each edges of the two complex. So intertwiners are invariant vector in the tensor product of the irreducible representation of the gauge group. So now I'm going to describe the three steps. But before, I just want to recall the initial motivation to build a spin foam, to have a spin foam framework. So initially, the spin foam model were built as an history formalism for loop quantum gravity, in order to get an history formalism for loop quantum gravity. So loop quantum gravity has been established as a background independent and non-perturbative quantization of general relativity through a canonical shame. That is, the starting point is a 3 plus 1 decomposition of space-time. And the kinematical aspect of loop quantum gravity is well-defined. The building blocks are the spin network states. And they provide the basis of the kinematical Hilbert space of loop quantum gravity. And spin foam model, therefore, were initially built as in order to provide the dynamic of spin foam spin network states and to get the transition amplitude between spin network states.
However, in fact, the link between the two approaches is not so clear, but I don't want to discuss about that here. And now I'm going to show how most of spinform models are built. So the starting point is to rewrite general relativity as a topological BF theory plus constraint, because we know how to discretize and quantize topological theory as a spinform model without losing any of its degrees of freedom, since in fact there is no local degrees of freedom in a topological theory. And the simplicity constraints are going to are important in order to reintroduce the local degrees of freedom of general relativity. So here we consider the Plebonsky action, where we still have the omega, the space-time connection, sorry, and B is now a two-form, which is constrained by the simplicity constraints, which are enforced by the Lagrange multiplicator, to come from a tetrad in such a way that we recover the previous the Plebonsky, the Holst-Palatini action, this action. So now we have general relativity written as a BF theory plus constraint. So I recall that the three steps of the spinform quantization procedure are first discretization, then we will quantify, and then only at the quantum level, the simplicity constraints are imposed. The issue in this procedure comes from the fact that since at the quantum level, continuum level, the simplicity constraints are second class constraints, at the quantum level, the simplicity constraint operator do not form an algebra which closes. So we do not have a precise procedure to impose this constraint. So the first step is the discretization. That is, we first discretize the manifold. That is, we replace the manifold by a cellular decomposition built from four cells glued together. In fact, we're interested to determine the boundary Hilbert space of our spin foam. So we focus on the boundary of the four cells, which is made from three cells glued together. And more precisely, in fact, we can impose all the simplicity constraints on a given three cells. So I'm going to focus only on a three cell that I'm going to denote V. Yeah.
Originally a four-manifold, so this is not just combinatoric. You start with the discretization of an existing four-manifold.
Yeah.
Good. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. Sorry. Yeah. I start from the full manifold, then I discretize the manifold as a.
And the topology of the four-manifold is fixed.
Yeah.
Good. Okay.
So I'm going to just to work on three cells. That I'm going to denote V for vertex, which is a dual element of our three cells. And the legs of our vertex will be dual to the faces of the three cells. Then we can discretize our B field. It's simply discretized by associating a B vector B to each face delta of the three cells. So in fact, the area, the norm of the B field gives the area of the surface of the three cells. Then we can distinguish two sectors. Either the B vector is a normal B vector to the face, either it is its Hodge dual, which is the normal B vector to the face.
In fact, in our case, since we are considering the old Spallatini action, that is, we have added a topological term with the energy parameter, both terms, both sectors will give the old Spallatini action. The only difference is that in this dual sector, the factors in front of each term will be different. But in fact, these two sectors have an importance when you do not consider the theory with when you consider the case without energy parameter, because in this case, the standard sector will give general relativity, whereas the dual sector will give a topological theory. We have an additional constraint on our B vector, which is a closure constraint. That is the sum of the B vector which belong to the same three cells equal zero. And then the simplicity constraint comes from the fact that all the faces of the three cells have to lay in the same hypersurface. And this can be translated into the two conditions depending on the sector, the standard, this one for the standard sector and this one for the dual sector. So this linear simplicity constraint are the simplicity constraints which are used in the EPRL HK models for people who know. And we see that an additional field appears, this for vectors. So this representation of the simplicity constraint is very nice because we can first we can distinguish the two sectors, and then it's we have a good geometrical interpretation of these constraints. However, the original formulation, which comes from the Plebonsky action, so I did not see, was using a quadratic simplicity constraint. So the equivalence between these two formulations has been shown by Roberto Pereira and Carlo Rovelli. And here I'm going to use this quadratic formulation. So in this quadratic formulation, we do not distinguish the two sectors, but we'll see why we want to use this one later.
Maybe it's not relevant, but what's the meaning of the dot in the linear simplicity constraint?
What's the meaning of the?
Of the dot.
Ah, here?
Yeah.
So it's a scalar product in the internal indices.
I think it's just redundant. I mean, there's a contraction of I with I.
Yeah, so it's I was looking for something besides the contraction.
Yeah.
It's just the contraction. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so now we can go with the quantification step. So the quantification of the three cells, it's very simple. In fact, we just associate to each face of the three cells an irreducible representation of the gauge group, spin 4. And the B field is quantized as a linear combination of SO4 generators and of its Hodge dual. And the exact linear combination comes from the symplectic structure of the can be determined from the symplectic structure of the boundary variables, but I'm not going to give any detail on this now here. And then we still have the closure constraint, which simply translates into a closure constraint on the SO4 generator, spin-4 generator. This requires that so this is equivalent to this requires that we have an invariant the three cell is invariant under the global spin 4 transformation.
So in fact, we associate to each three cells a spin four intertwiner. And now the simplicity constraint have to be imposed on this spin four intertwiner. So the first step is to translate the discretized simplicity constraint into a constraint on the SO4 generators. So we will distinguish two kind of constraints, the diagonal simplicity constraint and the cross simplicity constraint, which impose that the SO2 scalar product of the left side, the SO2 scalar product operator of the left side is proportional to the SO2 scalar product operator of the right side, and the proportionality coefficient is a function of the energy parameter. So as I already mentioned it, the issue comes from that this simplicity constraint do not commute. So the question is now, how do we impose them? So the first attempt has been to impose them, all the simplicity constraints, the diagonal simplicity constraint and the cross simplicity constraint, strongly. That is, we are looking for an intertwiner state that this equation is satisfied strongly. So when the two faces considered are the same, that is, we consider the simplicity, the diagonal simplicity constraint, this restricts the allowed irreducible representation associated to each face of the three cells. That is, we only consider simple irreducible representation with JL equal JR. Then, once this condition is satisfied, the cross-simplicity constraint has a unique solution given by the Barrett-Crane intertwiner. So this has been shown, initially shown in the case of the four-valent case, that is the three cell is a tetrahedron, and in the case without energy parameter, but in fact we can generalize. Yeah? Have a question, sorry? Ah, sorry. So this frozen intertwiner, we have some, interpretation problem with this frozen intertwiner, because from the point of view of the canonical approach, if we want to identify the boundary state of our spinform model with the loop quantum gravity kinematical Hilbert space, it seems that we don't have enough degrees of freedom, and this has been confirmed by a calculation on the graviton propagators. And in fact, this comes from the fact that when we impose strongly the simplicity constraint, in fact, we are imposing also the higher corrections, which come from the commutation between the simplicity constraint. So that means that, in fact, we are imposing really too many constraints. So in order to cure this issue, it has been proposed to solve the cross-simplicity constraint weakly. So that is, we are looking for semi-classical state. In fact, two different approaches have been proposed, but it has been shown that the two approaches give the same result, at least in most of the cases. There is some subtle cases when the energy parameter is bigger than one, then the two approaches differ. Otherwise, the results are the same. So weakly means that we are either looking for semi-classical states that has the expectation value of the simplicity constraint are vanishing. Otherwise, we can look for an Hilbert space that has all matrix elements of the simplicity constraint are vanishing on this smaller Hilbert space. So the first approach is the approach developed by Laurent Fredel, Kirill Krasnov, or Etera Levin and Simone Speciale, and the second approach is more the one developed by the group of Marseille with Carlo Rovelli, Roberto Pereira, and Jonathan Engel. But I want to emphasize on the fact that in this model, the diagonal simplicity constraints are still imposed strongly. So we still have the same restriction on the on the representation. And only the cross simplicity constraints are imposed weakly. However, there is no really physical reason to distinguish the diagonal simplicity constraint and the cross simplicity constraint. So the idea, using the new framework that I'm going to define now, is that we should consider all simplicity constraints on the same footing. And now what we are going to look for is semi-classical state that has all simplicity, simplicity constraints are solved weakly. So what I'm going to do now is to present this new framework and then to construct this new current state in order to have these new solutions. So, yeah, so now I finish with the spin form formalism presentation, and I'm going to introduce the UN framework for SU2 intertwiner. So, this UN framework is used quantum harmonic oscillator, so just a slide to recall some basic physics and some notations. So we are going to use the creation and annihilation operators, and I just recall that the current states of the harmonic oscillator are by definition the eigenvectors of the annihilation operator. So we will see that in order to build our UN framework, we are going to consider two N harmonic oscillators, and when we are going to construct the current state, we are going to follow this. Okay. So the UN framework is based on the Schwinger representation of the SU2 Lie algebra. So in fact, we can build the SU2 generator thanks to a couple of harmonic oscillators, so A and B. And and E is the energy operator that I'm going to generalize. So we are going to generalize this in the case of intertwiner with N legs. So we first consider the space of intertwiner with N legs and fix total area that I'm going to denote J. And J is the sum of the representation associated to each leg of the vertex or intertwiner. Or equivalently, it is the representation associated to each face dual to the leg of the intertwiner. We are going to denote Hn of J, the space of intertwiner with a fixed total area. And now to each leg, we associate a couple of harmonic oscillators, denoted A and B. So for the leg I, we have AI and BI. So by definition, SU2 intertwiner is invariant under the global SU2 action. So I just defined the global SU2 generators. And we will denote H of N, the space of N-valent SU2 intertwiner, which is the direct sum of HN of J, Hilbert space. So now, the UN framework for SU2 intertwiner, we need to define operators which commute with the global SU2 generator, since we want operator acting on the SU2 intertwiner space. So in fact, we have two families of operators, the E operator and the F operator. But I'm going to give the... So the E operator form a UN algebra. And so I, as I said, they are SU2 invariant operators. The diagonal operators form the Cartan subalgebra of the UN algebra. And we can define E equal to the sum of the diagonal operator, which is the U1 Casimir, and it gives the total area of the entrepreneur. In fact, it gives twice the total area of the entrepreneur. An interesting point is that this all the E operator commute with the total area operator. So this means that the E operator acts within a chain of J, and they leave the total area J invariant. The second class of operators, the F operator, still form a closed algebra with the E operator, but this time they are considered as annihilation operators because they allow to go from Hn of J to Hn of J minus 1, and the F dagger as the creation operator because they allow to erase the total area. Okay, and so one of the key results of the UN framework is that each Hn of J carry an irreducible representation of UN. But, so I won't give any more detail on that here. So now, as I told you, we want to define a coherent state. So I'm going to define some UN coherent state. So in fact, the E and F operators that I just defined can be seen as the quantization of classical matrices built from spinors. For this, in fact, we attach a spinor to each leg of the entrepreneur. And basically, the first component of the spinor can be seen as the label of the A harmonic oscillator, and the second component can be seen as the label of the B harmonic oscillator. So from this, we can build a creation operator, and we define our UN coherent state. So why are the UN coherent state? So first, they simply transform under UN transformation, and they can be built, they can be seen as coherent state a la Taylor-Ometh, because they can be built from the action of UN on a higher weight state. Moreover, for large area, the semi-classical states peak around the expectation value of the UN generators. And another interesting property is that they provide another complete basis of Hn of k. So then we can define the action of this operator on the UN coherent state. This can be done recalling just that for the harmonic oscillator, the annihilation operator act by multiplication on the coherent state, and the creation operator will act by derivation on the coherent state. So we can generalize that to the UN coherent state, and you can see that the F operator are annihilation operators. They act by multiplication on this this state, and the F dagger operator are creation operator. Then the exact derivation operator is given here. And we know also the exact action of the E operators. So now we have our framework. So how this approach can be used to deal with the simplicity constraint in the spin form framework. So I just recall that we have simplicity constraint and we want to impose them on a spin form intertwiner space. A spin form is isomorphic to SU2 times SU2. So that's the idea why we can use the SU2 framework. And then the simplicity constraint imposes a proportionality relation between the scalar product operator of the SU2 scalar product operator. So, and the question was how to implement them. So now, what do we have with the UN framework? So we have SU2 invariant operators, F and E, I just defined, and we have UN current state, and moreover, we know the action of this operator on the UN current state. So now the idea is to see if we can first rewrite the SU2 scalar operator in terms of this F and E operators, and then to see if it's possible to solve the simplicity constraint equation, the weakly, using our UN current state. And we want to do this considering all simplicity constraints on the same footing, and of course taking into account the energy parameter which appear in this proportionality coefficient. Otherwise, if we do not consider this the emergency parameter, this will be just an equality. Okay? So now I'm going to show how we can use this UN framework to solve the simplicity constraint. So, as I said, we want to impose the simplicity constraint on the spin four intertwiner space, which is in fact the which can be factorized as the SU2 intertwiner space for JL representation and the SU2 intertwiner space for JR representation. And so, in fact, it is the simplicity constraint which are going to couple these two sectors. And so the idea is that we are going to double all operators. That is, we are going to associate to each leg of our spin four intertwiners two couple of harmonic oscillator, L and BL, and the same for the right sector. And from this, we can construct the E operators and F operators for both sectors. So now one of the key points is that we can rewrite the scalar product, SU2 scalar product operator, using the E and F operators. So now we are going to simplify the diagonal simplicity constraint. Because in fact, this diagonal simplicity constraint, which impose proportionality relation between the square, these two operators, can be written using the E operator. So now we just have a linear constraint, and the cross simplicity constraint, we are going to use this relation. And in fact, this translates into another linear condition expressed in terms of the F operator. So in fact, we see that we can rewrite all simplicity constraints using the EF and F dagger operators. And the interesting point is that we know exactly the action of this operator on the UN current state. So we will see that we can in fact solve this constraint using the UN current state I just introduced. So now the next point is that we want to construct. In fact, I recall that all F operators commute. And we have seen that this F operator are annihilation operators, so they act by multiplication on the UN current state. So in fact, we can use this UN current state to find states which diagonalize all F operators. So this new current state are labeled by real number, beta, and still by the set of spinor. Okay, so we have two n spinor and a real number. So now the idea is that to look for a solution of the form BL tensor beta L tensor beta A, and then the solution are given only by are given by this relation. That is, if we have beta L equal rho beta A, and ZL equal ZA for all legs, then all the simplicity constraints are solved weakly. So, so we have new solutions that solve all the simplicity constraints. In fact, this, I forgot to precise that this constraints are solved at the leading order in the semi-classical limit. And so now what do we have? We have a new solution. The main difference between the other resolution of the simplicity constraint is that since we have weakened the diagonal simplicity constraint, now we do not only have a state with a representation fixed on each leg, but we have with some on the representation of the for each leg we have a sum of representation. And the first advantage of this resolution is that all the simplicity constraints are considered on the same footing. And another advantage is that, in fact, here we can multiply all spinor by an arbitrary phase. And this equation will still be satisfied. And so if we use the interpretation of loop quantum gravity with twisted discrete twisted geometries, the phase in fact, the phase represents the extrinsic curvature, and so it is what we are going to use when we want to construct a spin network state, that is gluing together intertwiner state. So the interest here is that we can impose condition to glue the intertwiner without affecting the simplicity constraint. That is, we can solve the simplicity constraint on each interplanar, and then we hope that we will be able to glue together this interplanar in order to construct a spin network state. So to summarize what we have done, so we revisited the issue of how to implement consistently the simplicity constraint, which turned the BF theory into general relativity. And in fact, the analysis we did with this new framework showed that there is a lot of freedom in the way simplicity constraints are implemented. And since there is no physical reason to deal with diagonal simplicity constraint in a different way from the cross-simplicity constraint, whereas it is what has been done until now, especially in the EPRL FK models. We try to solve all the simplicity, to consider all the simplicity constraints on the same footing. And so what we have now, a proposition of new solution using a new current state. So what do we need now? It's to glue several interfiners together. And as I told you, since we have this freedom on the face, on the spinners used to define the UN current state, it seems that this shouldn't be too difficult. Then, of course, we need to generalize this framework to the Lorentzian case, which is a physical case. And then maybe we could see if it's possible then to write a new model, and then we'll need to test this interfiner to study the semi-classical limit and everything. And also with this new framework, this new framework could be maybe used to understand better the symmetries of the spin foam amplitude or stuff like that. I forgot to put references before, so just some references concerning the most recent model, the EPRL FK models. So there are two different approaches, as I told you, the approach from Marseille using and the approach using current state. Then the UN framework has been developed by Laurent Fredel, Florian Girelli, and Etera Livin in different papers. The results I presented here are published in this article, and otherwise, maybe we need now to deal with the twisted geometries to understand better how to glue the different intertwiner, and this is done by Laurent Fredel and Simone Speziale. Okay, thank you. You mean, your question is, do we have...
What is the meaning of all the semi-classical?
Ah, the semi-classical... but, in fact...
Is that the same thing as having to be a fleet? Or is it
a fleet? Ah, we... Yeah? What we have done, we have determined semi-classical state that has the expectation value of the SU2 scalar product operator are equal from both sectors. So it's what we right. did. And it's the meaning, it's just that, in fact, we use semi-classical state, and this equality is true at the semi-classical limit. That is when we consider large J.
Okay, only large J.
Yeah. Exactly. Otherwise, there are other terms in but of lower order in J. Not really, because in fact, in order to solve the diagonal simplicity constraint, there is an issue with the immersive parameter. There is an issue of ordering. So that is that in fact they reorder the diagonal simplicity constraint, which is equivalent to consider that it's only true at the semi-classical limit, in fact. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah, it depends if you. Yeah, but it's the same for both. In fact, for here, it's just that we didn't try to reorder the operators, but we could have done it, and then we would have an exact equation. But if we do not reorder the operator, then it's just solved at the semi-classical limit, but it's equivalent. For me, it's the same meaning, because the reordering is just that you consider only the higher order.
Just to back up, I mean, I'm probably aware of my field here. But, I mean, if I wanted to evaluate the content of a quantum gravity only with semi-classical approximation, I can go back to 1978 and, you know, quantum gravity.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And it might be illuminating to understand something about the technology that's coming past forward. But once you have formulated the tracking world and where you're going to get to the past, it's only, what is the next step? Are you still aiming to making that definition of what the tracking world is?
If you reorder at if you consider the reordering relevant for the semi-classical level, then it's everything is exact and you don't really. Yeah. It's what has been done in the EPRL FK model, and it's what we could have done in this case.
Okay, but I'm not worrying. I mean, so for example, I can argue that we solve the same exactly with the Sodom state, the order,
yeah,
which is also semi-classical state. So, but most of us think that's the trick, that it happens to be the different order or semi-classical state in the exact state. But probably not the correct order in the same.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it
would be to be non-ordering
the
other
side.
So, I'm not sure.
Maybe it's always an ordering where you turn a semi-classical to work.
Yeah.
And not very strange to do that. Because if you're the ordering, you have to work.
Yeah.
And the old order range is that you put this set bar with that to zero. So I would say. Okay.
Questions? I have a question. So the capital N there, maybe I'm totally off, but everything is related to the number of faces on your tree cell. No?
Sorry,
the capital N in U of capital N. The capital N is the number of faces of your tree cell?
Yeah.
Okay, so if you were working, let's say, with tetrahedra in three dimensions, or you know, like with simplices, that would basically fix your capital N to some small value.
Four
or something like that. So does that simplify your amplitudes and things? Because, you know, you could first attempt to build this spin form amplitude and so on and so forth to, by gluing again the thing we already know how to glue in the other models, like tetrahedra.
Yeah.
So is there any something special happening that load N or?
We didn't look at the case with low end, because in fact one of the interests of this framework is that we can directly deal with arbitrary cellular decomposition. So, yeah. Which is
so then, is there something special to putting a very large M?
I mean, in the limit N.
The limit of something like when you take the very.
Yeah, in the UN. Yeah, I don't really know.
That is the interpretation. This UN algebra, what does it represent in terms of geometry?
But the shape of the...
Well, the algebra of, yeah, symmetry that acts on all possible shapes of all possible polynomials,
yeah,
and face.
Yeah.
So in the large end, it becomes a similar area preserving the diffeomorphism.
Yeah.
Of some kind of a ball or something.
Yeah. Well, of the two spheres.
Are there any other questions? Well, if not, let's have my day.